Hello, and welcome to EDUCAUSE Now. EDUCAUSE Now is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. I'm Jerry Bain, and on this edition of EDUCAUSE Now, we find out how to use metrics to improve your organization. We also feature an interview with Indiana University Library Dean David Lewis about their new e-text program. A metric is a system or standard of measurement, and a business metric is a system or standard of measurement used to gauge an organization's success, whether it be a question of efficiency, productivity, attendance, or any other measurable elements. According to the experts, the key to effectiveness is to avoid what they call so what metrics.
The so what metric is when you pull some data out in front of an audience and they say, so what?
Tim Chester is CIO for the University of Georgia. He says that overloading your audience with numbers and data is a good way to make them glaze over.
Ultimately, you're trying to tell a story. Know your audience well and tailor what you do to that audience. You know, overload of data, you know, I think ultimately is detrimental to you.
You want to get away from so what metrics? It's not too hard when you start with a purpose in mind, right? So we always have a root question.
Martin Klubeck is a strategy and planning consultant for the University of Notre Dame and author of the book Metrics, How to Improve Key Business Results.
So I actually avoid collecting data, analyzing anything, and reporting anything unless there's a root question we're answering. And because there's a root question driving that metric, I really don't have to worry about the so what attitude because I'm not presenting them just for the purpose of presenting. I'm presenting them their answers. And so they know exactly what they're going to use it for, how they're going to use it, and if they did a really good job, they know how they're not going to use it.
It's also important that you're choosing the right elements to measure. Even though it may seem like a logical direction, measuring against your competition can often be more harmful than helpful.
We want to say, well, how good are we? We want to compare to somebody else. And I much rather you start you off comparing against yourself. How good were you last year? How good were you last month? Let's set a baseline, and that'll be our benchmark versus benchmarking against another institution, and then see how you improve. Now, once you're happy and your customers are happy and you're meeting customers' expectations and you know you're doing a good job, if you'd like to go see how that compares to other organizations, that's fine.
Absolutely.
But the real people you have to satisfy is your customers, not the other organization and not a competition against them.
And how do metrics align with strategy? If you're using metrics properly, the strategic view and operational view should always reflect each other.
So the conversation that you have around all of this stuff is really where the value add is. You know, it's not about just producing things that sit on shelf. It really is about trying to understand complex problems and bringing people together around those understandings.
Well, operationally, if I'm trying to get an insight to something, that should logically influence my strategic view. Right? It's going to tell me things like operationally, we're either doing well in this area, having problems in this area. This is a pain point. This is something I need to adjust. This is something I need to visit. Well, those things should then inform my plans on a strategic, longer range level, and vice versa.
Another pitfall of using metrics to measure your organization's success is using the collected data and benchmarks wisely.
A lot of people right now, the catchphrase is data-driven decisions. And that scares me to death. I don't want you making decisions based on the data. I want you being informed by the information that you gather, by the measures that you analyze, and then you put together your picture.
Some of the more difficult times when you're having conversations around data is when the data either speaks in a way that was unexpected or counter to people's best guess or their instincts. So having your act together and having your numbers exactly right is incredibly important in those circumstances.
So let's review. Metrics are measures. Metrics should be driven by questions or purpose. Metrics should be used to tell a story to your audience, not a number dump. Data from metrics should not be used to drive decisions, but simply inform decisions. The real value of metrics is opening conversation and collaboration about complex subjects and problems. And metrics should help operations reflect strategy and vice versa.
And that's where I think the real impact is. What actions are you going to take from this data? What priorities are you going to set? And how are you going to respond to the answers to the questions that you found. And then once you've finished, you start the whole process over again.
What role, if any, should colleges and universities play in the shift from print to digital textbooks? One perspective is that e-texts are consumer transactions between a publisher and a student, and institutions shouldn't be involved. Another perspective is that volume licensing by institutions can dramatically reduce the cost to students and improve the terms through a business-to-business negotiation. Likewise, what software is needed? Do institutions want a common software platform for e-text reading and annotation, or are four different software systems to read five e-texts just fine for a freshman? I spoke with David Lewis, Library Dean at Indiana University, about their new e-text program, which addresses these very issues.
Could you give us a brief overview of Indiana University's e-text program and how it reduced costs for students?
So what we're looking at is the extraordinarily dysfunctional market for textbooks. It doesn't work for anybody in the system. The authors don't get as much money as they think they deserve. The publishers have this downward spiral of sales. The students are extraordinarily annoyed about the high prices, and they do all kinds of things to try to avoid them. Many of those things are dysfunctional. They'll sell their books before the end of the semester, and some of them are illegal. They're pirated copies all over the web. So we're looking at this and trying to figure out how do we create a sustainable, separate economic model. So our goal is to create a different model that's cheaper. And the way in which we've done this is we've said to the publishers, we'll set up a system where everybody in a class pays for the textbook. And we'll collect that money and we'll pass it on to you. And in exchange for that, we want prices that are significantly below what the current list price is. And what we did to sort of establish that threshold was we looked at what the best case for a student would be. If you were lucky and worked hard, what's the cheapest price you could get? And that pretty much is in the neighborhood of 40% of list. So we said we want 35% of list from the publishers. So the negotiations were hard, and not all of the publishers had any interest in it, frankly, but a number of them did. And so what we've said is our arrangement is everybody pays. They pay 35% plus a small fee for the software, the reader, in essence. And so the students get a better deal, although they all have to pay.
What were some of the considerations that went into negotiations with publishers?
Again, I think that the important thing to understand is the current system does not work, and they know it. But it's hard for them, as large corporations, to see the way forward. So I think one of the hard parts about the negotiations was we would have conversations with the publishers, and they would go back in-house and try to figure out if it made sense. And I think the conversations on the publisher side in-house were probably in some ways harder than the conversations with us. And many publishers think they can see a way forward. And we began by modeling what they can reasonably expect. And the important variable is that at this point in time, somewhere less than 40% and probably approaching 25% of students in a course buy the textbook new. And that number is going down and down and down. So we modeled that and said to the publishers, look, in this arrangement, 35%, you're going to make more money. And some publishers said, yeah, that makes sense. And others to date have not come around. So it was a long and complicated negotiation, in part because we're really pushing the boundaries of, so it's an entirely different model, and people are trying to figure out, does it make sense?
How does annotation, collaboration, accessibility, and faculty participation figure into the new software?
So when we buy the e-text, it gets loaded into a reader that was developed by a small Indiana company called CourseLoad. And it does the kinds of things that you would anticipate. It allows individual annotation. You can underline. You can highlight. You can share your annotations with your friends, your study group, the whole class. The faculty member can insert material into the text so they can mark a paragraph and insert a URL and say, here's an example from the Wall Street Journal that shows that this economic concept as it appeared last week. The interesting finding that we had in our early studies of this, we had some prototyping, and if the faculty member, even in a very small way, annotates the text, engages with the text, it significantly increases the student engagement with the text. So I think it does provide some opportunities, but it really isn't yet the kind of thing that's going to change the world in terms of the software application. We can certainly look down the road and say, okay, we're going to integrate media and models and all of that stuff. This is not about that yet.
Is this a model you think other institutions could adopt? And if so, do you have any advice for those institutions?
I think that from our perspective, we're trying to change the market entirely. So I think that the more institutions that look at our model and say, yeah, this makes sense, if everybody did it, it would change the market in the way that electronic music has changed and would potentially eliminate a lot of dysfunction. Publishers put out a new edition often every 18 months. And those editions are fundamentally, in many cases, exactly the same. They'll change a few problem sets. They'll repaginate in some way. They'll move a chapter here and there in order to have it be different. So that makes no sense. Introductory calculus, introductory physics have not fundamentally changed in 200 years. So what they're teaching doesn't need to be rewritten every 18 months, but that costs everybody money. And so our hope is that if the model changes, the publishers can behave in ways that make more sense. You have to pay people money to make textbooks, good textbooks. So I think the thing that we would encourage everybody to look at this model, the thing that will be hard is that, A, the institutions haven't really played a role as institutions. So somebody in the university has to say, this matters. And it doesn't logically fall to anybody. It doesn't fall to the library. It doesn't logically fall to the IT people. And in many cases, the people who might be involved, the bookstore, the people who manage bookstores, have a conflict of interest. You know, they just signed a contract with a bookstore company to manage the university bookstore for the next 10 years. And the bookstore is not part of our model. So somebody has to take hold of it and say it's important to the university.
David Lewis is Library Dean at Indiana University. You can find out more about the stories and interviews you hear on the program by visiting our show notes at www.educause.edu/now. EDUCAUSE Now is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE. Thanks for listening.